Hi, and welcome to the Luminaries in and Out of Sect podcast, a show about the sun and how astrologers embody and relate to it. My name is SP Hall, and I'm your host. In today's episode, we're doing something a little bit different than our regular sun series. So I put out a call on social media recently for Aquarius suns that would like to come onto the podcast to have a more casual conversation about the placement and to look at the charts of famous Aquarius suns. As we are looking in depth at a lot of charts, I would suggest watching the video version of this episode on my YouTube channel. But if you're unable or unwilling to do that, I made an effort in this episode to at least spell out the important placements in each of these people's charts as we talk about them. If you do watch the episode on YouTube, I'd ask that you please like, subscribe, comment, do all that fun stuff. I'm not sure if I'll continue to do more episodes like this for other sun signs, but we'll see what kind of feedback and engagement this one gets and whether people like it and would be interested in additional episodes like this. I was really honored to be joined by five really lovely astrologers and people: Anna Astronaut Pants, Jolly Bodhi Mindful, Nicola Allen, Solar Simone, and Eloise the Social Astrologer. Together we talked about the charts of Christian Dior, Shakira, Judy Blume, Megan Thee Stallion, and Michael Jordan. I think this conversation displayed the diversity of the ways that this placement can show up in a birth chart and in a native's life, as well as commonalities that can arise between natives with this sun sign. These astrologers are all doing some really great work right now, so I want to just take a moment to plug a few things. Solar Simone has a great YouTube channel. She's been doing a lot of really cool videos on there, especially about TV, film, and astrology. So you can find a link for that in the show notes. I've also linked Eloise's course on the lunar nodes and eclipses that we discuss in this episode. In addition, she has a lot of great blog posts on her website, one of which we also mention in this episode. Nicola recently put out an oracle deck, which is really cute. I really like the illustrations of this deck. And Nicola and I recently had a conversation on Twitter where she shared the interpretation of my natal sun's decan from the deck's guidebook, which I thought was very intriguing. So I definitely check that out in the show notes if you're interested. In addition, I've linked Jolly and Anna's websites in the show notes. Jolly also has some interesting talks linked in their link tree, and I've also provided a link to the Association of Young Astrologers, an organization to which Anna is the treasurer. They occasionally give talks, a few of which I've attended and gotten a lot out of, so I definitely look into becoming a member of that if you're interested. As always, if you enjoy the work that I'm doing on this podcast, please contribute to its sustainability by becoming a supporting member on my website or offering a one-time donation. There you can also find information on my services. I'm offering natal and timing consultations as well as answering horary questions. I hope you enjoy the conversation. All right, everybody, thank you so much for being with me here today. I'm really excited about this. For those who are tuning in via video or via the podcast, the audio, this is something I'm doing that's a little different for Aquarius season. I don't know why I started it now, but and I don't know, I was telling the guests before we started recording, I don't know if it was a shower thought or a walk thought, but during the full moon in Leo the other day, I had this thought of bringing some Aquarius suns on the podcast to talk about notable famous Aquarius suns. I'm a Capricorn sun. In not very Capricorn sun fashion, this is very like unstructured, but I'm also Sag, and in Sag fashion, it's very unstructured. So we're going to see how it goes. I'm really excited to hear the thoughts of my guests today and have this conversation. So we're going to start with introductions. And does anybody want to go first?
I'll go first. So my name is Jolly, as in happy. It's not pretty when I'm not happy, but I try to keep that to a minimum. Sun, moon, and rising, I am an Aquarius sun. I am a Pisces moon and a Scorpio rising.
Awesome. Cool. All right, Anna, do you want to go next?
Sure. Hi, I'm Anna Dunlaney. I am an Aquarius sun, a Scorpio moon, and a Virgo rising.
Awesome. Nicola, would you like to go next?
Yeah, I'm Nicola. So Aquarius sun, Scorpio moon, and Libra rising.
Cool. All right, Simone.
My name is Simone, and I'm a Cancer rising Leo moon Aquarius sun.
Awesome. I'm hearing a lot of like water mixed in, like Scorpio mixed in with Aquarius suns. That's really cool. Heloise, how about you?
I'm Eloise. You might know me as Alabaster. And I'm an Aquarius sun, Scorpio rising, Capricorn moon. So lots of Scorpio here today.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah, I'm sorry if I mispronounce people's names for people who are listening. Like we're meeting each other, some of us, for the very first time. Although there are several of you that have a special connection that I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about. There's three of you that are born on the same day. So you have the sun and the same degree of So Nicola, Jolly, and Simone are all born the same day. And how did you guys learn that you were born the same day?
So I met Jolly at a conference last year, and she offered to look at my chart. And when she asked my birthday, she was taken aback when I explained it was the 11th of February. Mm-hmm. And then Simone recently updated her Twitter handle to her birthday, which happens to be my birthday. And it popped up, and I was like, another one. So yeah, cool. that's how we discovered. And I think I tagged Jolly in that post or something like that.
Cool. I can imagine when you meet somebody like that at a conference, you have to be like, this person's going to be my friend, you know, that kind of resonance.
We had already connected like through the internets. And then I sought her out in person there, and we were already getting on quite well, and mm-hmm. Yeah, that just confirmed it really. So yeah.
Yeah, awesome. And Solar Simone, for those who don't know, that's like Simone's kind of handle. It is very solar of you to kind of post your birthday in a public place.
Yeah, every year before my birthday, I'm like, I have to let people know. I have to, you know, bring up the anticipation, the hype. Mm-hmm. So it does not come as a surprise. Yeah. And I also kind of feel like having like a detriment sun. I feel like my whole brand is very like solar remediation and trying mm-hmm. to. But then I also have like a Leo moon, who's like my chart ruler driving the boat. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. So I guess. Do y'all think, before we jump into looking at a chart, should we talk a little bit about the sun and what we feel like the sun means in Aquarius, like the concept of detriment in general? Like, just curious to hear if anybody has thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think when you put out the call of like, do any Aquarius suns want to be on this? And like, I think we all responded, and I'm like, of course there's like a group of us, you know, as opposed to like Aquarians, just we travel in packs, you know. Mm-hmm. And like, I also have lots of friends who have my birthday or near my birthday, and so I think that it's just kind of like it's Saturnian, but in the like Aquarian group way, not the Capricorn sort of more like authoritarian, like representing the group way. It's like the true group itself.
Yeah, and we were joking a little bit in the group chat that we had going on planning for this episode, like what is a group of Aquariuses, Aquarii? Someone said a parliament, someone else said a rebellion. I'm curious if we can come to a consensus. Ooh. On that.
I love a rebellion. I think it's very fitting.
That's like... where my brain went to, for sure.
Love that.
Well, I thank you for allowing this Capricorn sun to join your Aquarius sun rebellion today. I feel maybe like a little bit of a rebel at heart, so I appreciate being able to do that. Do we have any additional thoughts about the Aquarius sun, or like why Aquarius and groups? Like what, does anybody else feel like that delineation is resonant just for Aquarius and groups, and where does that kind of come from?
Yeah, I feel like it's very interesting because I feel like Aquarius is one of these signs, you know, when you're introduced to astrology, like many of us have been with like horoscopes
and things like that. It's one of the signs that's the most different from what you learn at first versus what you like dive deeper into. You're like, oh wow, it's, you know, rulership of Saturn, you know, it's a lot more different than what I thought. And I remember early during my studies, I was, you know, trying to make sense of it and understand it more deeply. And, you know, one of the first metaphors I came across was like Aquarius is, you're living outside of the wall, like a archetypal leaf. Mm-hmm. Capricorn is like within the wall. Aquarius is outside of the wall. And like, it seems like it's a lot of us when we climb out, you know, you're like, oh, hi guys. To me, that's how it feels.
Yeah. Yes. And I was going to say about the whole group thing, like, I feel like that's so true, because I was actually just like with my friends earlier, and like we all have like birthday in the same week, so we're trying to plan like what to do for our birthday. So I was like, oh, we should just do like a group dinner, and like you guys should all come to my house. Like it was very much like, okay, like we're all gonna do our birthday together instead of like this singular, like, you know, sort of thing.
That's beautiful.
And then yeah, exactly. And then I think what helped me kind of figure out what Aquarius is like definitely about the like contrarian like kind of nature, and that it's just kind of about sometimes about being different for different sake. Kind of like I'm not like other girls type of attitude. And then yeah, like that sort of thing. And then also I was talking to one of my Aquarius Sun friends today, and she was talking about how like she like the way she writes in her journal is like very detached and very like observational. And I would tell her, like, that's so Aquarius coded, bro. Like you just like, you know, that distance like from things, almost kind of like the like art anthropologist sort of stereotype. So I kind of see us as both being like very social, but also the loner, like one we want to be, and kind of like doing our own thing and like, yeah, to the beat of our own drum.
Yeah, totally. I think it's interesting. So with that, it's like, I noticed that a lot with in my Aquarius moon episodes with like people talking about being detached from like their emotional life in a way, or being kind of being able to kind of separate. It's interesting if we think about the sun as just like mind or thought in general, kind of like being able to take that step back and look at one's own thinking and how that functions. So that's really interesting. But I think the other thing that comes to mind, Eloise, comparing modern and traditional rulership, I think Aquarius has the biggest kind of gap, perhaps. Like there's the most tension, maybe in my mind, between Uranus and Saturn compared to like Pluto and Mars with Scorpio, or, you know, Jupiter or Neptune with Pisces. Like Jupiter is still kind of dreamy. Mars and Pluto are both intense, but Uranus is this kind of like rebel, and Saturn is, I don't know, I don't perceive Saturn as that. I'm just interested to hear if people have thoughts on that at all.
I do, because I'm one of those 88 people who has Saturn and Uranus conjunct. Mine is actually 8 minutes apart in Sagittarius.
Oh, wow.
So, but it is at 29 degrees. So I like just, you know, miss that Capricorn cutoff. But for me, I think that in a way it was kind of like, I'm like, well, there's a side of me that is rebellious and a loner. There's also a side of me that is handing the person next to me a hammer and saying, let's fuck this up together. so like, for me, I think that, you know, I think the Saturn part is the planner, you know, like, we're not just gonna destroy something to destroy it, which I think is like the Uranus connotation, the chaos. I think the Saturn is the destruction with a purpose. So.
Yeah, that's an important distinction.
I've got a slightly different take from what.
Yeah, let's be contentious a little bit here. No, I'm just kidding. Disagreement is healthy.
No, and I love what Anna shared. And I, it's not that I disagree with it. It's just coming at it from another angle. And that Absolutely. Is this idea that a lot of the outer planets from, let's say, a Hellenistic point of view took on a lot of the roles that traditional planets already had.
Mm-hmm.
So we can say some of the pieces that are attributed to Uranus now once belonged to Saturn. Mm. So for me, for example, Saturn rules the opposition It is literally opposite the sun.
Right.
And so in that regard, for me, probably because I have a Pisces stellium, but I find both Aquarius and Pisces to be signs of paradox. And in Pisces, it's obviously the fish, because they're pulling, they're on the same rope, but pulling in different directions. In Aquarius, we see pure Saturn, because in Capricorn, of course, there's an exaltation ruler, which is Mars. So for me, Capricorn is like the blood and guts of being embodied and planning and structure and building and blood, sweat, and tears. Whereas Aquarius is literally air and pure Saturn. So it's much more ideological and conceptual, and this idea of past, present, and future, Saturn as time. So, you know, if we were to bring the Aquarius piece in, for me, the key word for Uranus is, not the Aquarius piece in, Uranus piece, is authenticity. And I think that most Aquarians would agree that there is this yearning, this urge to somehow be an individual. And the way one of my teachers basically taught us was, this is Adam Ellenboss. It was really beautiful. He basically said, if you have Saturn ruling the opposition, then at the end of the day, it brings in the idea of power. And power brings in the idea of marginalization. And if people then want to argue, well, you know, it's all, there's no duality. It's just, you are God. You just haven't realized it yet. Well, then how do I, it's that, again, that kind of union. How do I merge and yet remain an individual? How do I individuate within the merging?
Yeah.
So. That's so interesting. If I can add something quickly, yes, please, as well, that I find so interesting, and with what you said, Jolly, as well, is that if you think about it, Aquarius suns and Capricorn suns as well, they're ruled by Saturn. And so I feel like, so based on like your chart and different people are going to have different Saturns. And so I feel like the generational component is going to be especially important, because if you have like a Cancer sun, you know, like the moon moves so fast, but Saturn, I think I felt it with, you know, so I'm a Saturn and Taurus baby. And I have some friends who have, you know, like Capricorn suns, Aquarius suns, but with Saturn and Aries. And I feel like that the contrast, there's like the generational contrast, but also the aspect. Like my son squares its ruler by sign, at least, whereas people with Saturn and Aries, it's a sextile. So very different type of relationship. And so we do rebel for the sake of rebelling and oppose the mainstream, as Simone said really well. But I think do it in relation to our own generation and to others, based on that a lot more, I feel.
Yeah, that's a really important point. Just like astrology kind of basic building blocks. If you have any planet in a sign, you have to look at where the planet that rules that sign is located, and so on and so forth, which is why I think dispositor trees are so popular in modern astrology, for example, because like where's the planet that has the final say, or, you know, what have you, or the planets that are sharing that kind of responsibility. And that's going to change the flavor of the way the sun shows up, or it's going to change the aspect between the sun and Saturn, if there is an aspect. And those are also, you know, incredibly important things to consider.
Yeah. Awesome. I was going to chime in, like when you talked about the, so I'm Saturn Aries, like sextile my sun Aquarius, And I was like really thinking about this a lot because I also have a lot of friends who are like Aquarius risings or Aquarius suns who also have Saturn Aries. And I really do feel like the way we work is definitely a lot more impulsive than, like, for example, I have Saturn and Capricorn friends, and their perspective on life is so different, but it's like very nice because obviously they'd be older than me. So it's kind of like that nice kind of dynamic where it's like, okay, they have more of a different sense of time than I do. And I didn't realize, like, yeah, how Martian my sense of time is in terms of, like, yeah, like when I posted that whole tweet about, like, how long does it take to make these eight pentacles? And like somebody said, a long afternoon. I was like, exactly, like, you get it. Like, this was not a year long endeavor. This is not like the whole life. This is a long afternoon. And I'm like, that's how high Aries can count, you know? Like, I don't know. That's kind of how I feel about, like, yeah, my perception of time is so different. Yeah.
It's so funny, Simone, because I think I commented on that. I have the sun in Capricorn, conjunct Saturn in Capricorn. And I was like, it took a few hours, but with decades of learning how to do that in a few hours. Yeah. All right. Before we jump into looking at charts, does anybody have any additional thoughts to share about sun in Aquarius?
I think the exile portion. I can speak to that as someone who grew up in a country that was very far away from home. Kind of having a third culture kid experience where I was living in Borneo, and I wasn't part of the culture there. And then I come back home to the UK and I wouldn't feel part of the culture there. So I think that's quite a common Aquarian experience. And I think Aquarians almost seek it out as well. I've certainly packed a bag and moved to Mexico for 3 years recently. I'm back in the UK now, but it's kind of that Saturnian at the limits experience that I think we often find in Aquarius as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I may ask, what decan is your sun in?
It's the third.
Oh, the third. Okay. I was just being reminded of my Venus in Aquarius, which is in the first decan. And I think that decan's name is like literally called Exile.
Yes, so that's right. Yeah, Mark of Exile. Yeah. Well, yeah. I have a stellium. So I have a planet, a personal planet in each decan.
Wow. Yeah. Cool. That's like a whole, I think, conversation unto itself. Like, obviously each sign has deconic subdivision, so by 10, and then there's a bound subdivision by, you know, an unequal amount for each sign. But that's an interesting thought too, like how do planets, given even in a one kind of place, show up in different ways depending upon how that place is subdivided.
Would just jump in and add one more piece, and that is with because I've also traveled like Nicola and kind of lived in a lot of different places. And I love traveling, and I've always loved learning about new cultures. But I remember hearing somewhere about how one of the real missions of Aquarius is to find home within themselves. And I think that's, for me anyway, something that really does make sense, because I have spent so much of my life looking externally for validation. I think having the sun in detriment, so to speak, is definitely this idea of doubting yourself and of doubting your abilities, but then growing into it, if you will. So yeah, just wanted to share that.
Do others like relate to that idea?
Yeah, like I think I kind of related. I was also thinking about, I noticed that like for myself and like other Aquarius suns, we tend to have like really hard with like self-perception, like seeing how, like understanding how other people see us and like integrating that into our own identity as well. Like I kind of like be like, you know, maybe hard on myself at times, or kind of be like, oh, I'm not doing enough, etc. And then all friends be like, we don't think that about you at all. Like, you know, and oftentimes I'm like, I forget, oh, other people are also perceiving me. Like I'm not in my own little world. Like, you know, I have to deal with like visibility as it means like the opinions of other people and stuff like that. And like that kind of being, yeah, like just having a weird sense of self, I guess. Yeah.
But a very strong sense of self, I think. I don't know about you guys, but like the authenticity piece comes through quite strongly. Like I definitely know who I am. I'm not sure other people perceive me in the same way, but it's definitely there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, should we get into looking at some charts? Awesome. Eloise, you want to go first?
Yeah,
share,
for
share
sure.
your chart.
Yay. Let me that so the chart I decided to bring out is the chart Christian Dior. All right. Can you guys see this?
Yep, we can see that.
Amazing. So I actually wrote a piece on his chart like 2 years ago or something on my blog, because it's that type of chart that you see and you're like, oh my God, there's a lot going on and I love this. I have somewhat of a, I have like similar placements as well. So I was seeing this like, wow, okay, let's dive into this. But he's one of my favorite Aquarians. Like I love in general seeing a sun that's like just barely there, you know what I mean? I feel like it makes for a really interesting expression. It's like at zero Aquarius. His sun really like it has, it's like a tight square to Mars and Scorpio in the first house. There's just like a lot going on. But so if I have to sum it up, like a few key highlights of his life. So many people know like Dior, obviously like the brand, but usually a little bit less about the couturier, about the designer. So actually he was this guy who was born in kind of like a bourgeois family. And he was really into like art and fashion and things like that. And his dad was like, no, you're going to be a diplomat. And you can see that, wow, that Cancer moon right up there.
In the ninth house of like foreign things. Yeah.
Exactly. Like moving to a pose, like to this like out of sign of position to the sun. So I'm like, ooh, very literal. And so to me, he's like the definition of a late bloomer, like because he actually started designing clothes at the age of 42. So, you know, he was not like a young designer at all. He had this initially, so he had this art gallery in Paris, like in his late 20s, and it was working like pretty well. And he would sell people like Picasso. He had a really like good eye, good taste, obviously. But then it closed because of like the 1929 crash, essentially. And he was ruined. His family was ruined. And to make some money, he started drawing some illustrations like in magazines and then for like some people who he knew who worked in fashion. And then the designer thing came like late, but then all at once kind of thing. And another thing about his chart that I really love is that he was obsessed with divination and with astrology. He had an in-house astrologer at Dior. He designed like an astrology collection. And when he was young, this diviner, basically, according to myth, told him that he would become extremely famous through women. Powerful women would make him famous. And he has this like rejoicing, exalted Venus, you know, that's just like right there. So there's just like a lot to like that's going on. But I really like that he had this really ambiguous relationship with like his dad, and he was a late bloomer. And to me, that's very, you know, Aquarius sun, like rolling the 10th house in the fourth house with like Saturn co-present. But ultimately, he like became a household name that's like still famous today. So,
that's... I think the thing that jumps out with that, if I may jump in first, is that in so he has a for listeners again, he is Scorpio rising, so Mars in the first whole sign house. He has the Sun and Saturn in the fourth whole sign house of Aquarius. His MC's in Leo, and he has the Moon in the ninth in Cancer. So he's just like he has a lot of dignified planets in his chart. And in night charts, I don't know exactly where I heard this, but I sometimes look at Saturn as the father rather than the sun as the father. In a day chart, like looking at the sun as kind of a natural significator for the father, but like also the fourth house is just the house of parents and Saturn rules it. Saturn is the malefic out of sect. So it's like, okay, there's going to be some challenges here with parents potentially, and perhaps especially the father in comparison to the mother. So like, that's a really kind of interesting thing. Anybody have any other thoughts that just kind of jump out looking at this chart?
Also, may I just add, I opened the article with a quote of his that says, "I'm a mild man, but I have violent tastes," which is very literal for that chart, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Mars ruling the ascendant in the first, like, this is a person who, yeah, like a very kind of powerful personality, I can imagine. And the connection with astrology feels really interesting too, with like the ruler of the ninth in the ninth. This, you know, the ninth house is associated with divination and astrology. And so it kind of like is there that astrology would be at least an interest. So that's super cool. If no one has any other comments about this, I also think that the nodal axis is really interesting with the south node in the fifth. And I'm interested in people's thoughts about the nodes in general, because I have the node in my ninth and my south node in my ninth. And I just feel like ninth house things come so easily to me. Like, I was a philosophy student in college. I've always been interested in learning. It's just like, I can't help myself. And it's interesting that he just like the fifth house is associated with creativity. And he just like stumbles into his career basically, which feels very kind of like south node in the fifth in some ways.
Sam Reynolds talks about how the south node is like your dominant hand. So you don't think about it, what you're using, and the north node can feel a bit more awkward, like your other hand, unless you're ambidextrous, obviously. But it feels a little bit more awkward. It takes a bit more effort. And I know Austin Coppock talks about the fifth, 11th axis. You know, the fifth is what you create, and then the 11th becomes your audience. So I think that's also quite interesting as well.
Yeah. When I saw the south node with Venus, I just thought, there's an editor. Like, there's a person who knows how to cut and how to make something fit and be tailored, which is like very much what Dior is about. And the fact that it's in a water sign, it means that, like, and again, with like that, you know, powerful Mars on the ascendant, it's like, he can take the most slippery fabrics and the most ethereal things and give them that, like, not necessarily structure, but that form and like take away what's unnecessary.
Yeah, definitely. Not to plug my own stuff, but I actually did a course and a guidebook about the nodes. I'm like obsessed with how literal they are. And something I've noticed with like Venus like south node aspect, I don't know why, but like the creative type comes back again and again and again. And Anna, I feel like it's such a wonderful insight, like this editor thing. It's like knowing what to put, where to put it, but also I feel like it's the kind of placement that gives like such a beautiful result, and that's so painful behind the scenes. Like he was always like credited for his like dreamy collections, like how, as you said, like ethereal things were. And it really does feel like he just like took a cloud and like the wings of a butterfly and like stitched them together and it looks perfect. But like, I'm looking at this and I'm like, wow, it must have been so like painful and annoying behind the scenes, you know, like the whole like creative process must have been hell. But you know, the beautiful north node result is there.
Yeah, and again, like mutable water, you know, like this thing that's almost indiscernible. It's difficult to discern sometimes, and Venus's association with both beauty and unity. So it's like bringing together these difficult things, like things that shouldn't be able to be joined together in a way that's, you know, like yeah, dreamy, like you said, again, to bring in the kind of Neptune, Jupiter, you know, rulership of Pisces, the ethereal quality of that. Amazing. Awesome. This is a really cool chart. Thank you for sharing it. Anybody want to go next sharing a chart? Nicola, sure. How would you like to go?
Let me find.
Cool.
I'll just stub the share right now.
Cool.
That's okay?
Yeah.
Great.
Awesome.
So give me a second. Let me find it. Okay. Okay, is that sharing? Can you see?
I do not see it.
Okay. Oh, system preferences. Why is that popping up? If someone else wants to go first, then I can fix my
Yeah, Anna, stuff. Do you want to go?
Sure.
Cool.
All right. So I kind of had, I was like, oh man, who should I do? Because I was a bit torn between two different charts. And I'll mention them, but I'm probably just going to talk about one. So I love Shakira so much. So that's what amazing. I'm going to talk about. But I also am fascinated by Jeb Bush. So everybody go look at Jeb Bush's chart because it's pretty wild. I might have to switch. There we go. Okay. Can you all see?
Yep.
Okay. So this is a B-rated chart. But it fits so well with the Saturn story that I want to tell you guys about her, that I think that it really works. So Shakira is an 11th house Aquarius sun. She's got a 0 degrees Aries Venus, just like me, which is probably why I like her so much.
Nice.
And her ascendant is an Aries, ruled by a Capricorn Mars conjunct Mercury. And I think it's really funny, her choir teacher, or no, the choir teacher at her school rejected her because she said she had too much vibrato and sounded like a goat.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, whew, that's tough. But I think that really speaks to her Saturn in the fifth house in Leo, which is directly opposite her sun. It is retrograde. And, you know, again, in the fifth house, that just what a powerful and also popular performer. And then she has, just like Christian Dior, she has that nice Cancer moon, but hers is in the fourth.
Yeah. Funny.
Yeah, I know. I was like, wow, that's really interesting that they both have that. And Shakira, you know, she's from Colombia. That's where she was born, but her father was a U.S. citizen, but his parents were from Lebanon. So she really draws on Lebanese and Middle Eastern music and influences, and also a lot of Colombian instrumentation as well. And so she's just got this like really great sound that's very unique. But the thing I really want to talk about with her is her legal troubles. Because she has a seventh house ruled by Libra, which, you know, she's got Venus in Aries in detriment, so things are not always great for her. She has had two main partnerships in her life, one with Antonio de la Rúa, who is the son of the former president of Argentina. And they were also business partners. And when they separated in 2010, they were like, we're still gonna be business partners. And also, I think it's funny that she said, we don't need to get married because it's just a piece of paper, which I feel like is so Aquarius and like, just like, we don't need it to be legal, right? But they did still have this business partnership. And he sued her were $100 million saying that he was owed that from their partnership. And Wow. Yeah, interestingly, when they went to court, Saturn was in Scorpio in her eighth house. Or actually, no, it wasn't. It was in Virgo in her sixth house.
Okay.
Sorry, getting ahead of myself. When she won the case and did not have to pay him any money, Saturn was in Libra, which seems kind of odd. I was like, what's going on with that? You would think that she would lose that case. But going on at the same time, she had just met her second partner, who is the famous football player Gerard Piqué. And she moved to Barcelona. They fell in love. They had children. And all of that kind of happened within the same time span of this lawsuit with her former partner. So then, fast forward to 2017, and she is named as one of the people who is squirreling away money in an offshore account in the Bahamas in the Paradise Papers.
Wow.
Yeah. And the Spanish government was very interested to find out that she had not paid taxes in 2012 to 2014. And that was when that case was like literally had been decided a few months before then. So they're like, you were living in Spain then, you didn't pay any taxes. And she was like, no, I was living in the Bahamas and I was touring. But she kind of wasn't, you know, that's kind of what kind of shook out. But for whatever reason, it took a long time for she went to court in 2018. And that's when Scorpio Saturn started going into Scorpio. And the Spanish court was basically like, they did a hearing and they were like, no, you, there is actually a case against you. We're going to try you in criminal court. And she could have gone to jail for 8 years if they had convicted her, because she decided to not. They said, you can pay the money, you can settle. Or, and she said, no, I'm innocent, I want to go to court. This turned out to not be such a good idea. So that happened when Saturn was in Capricorn. So again, just like things are just not going good for Shakira. And people were concerned that she was actually going to go to jail. And, you know, I think that the Sun Saturn opposition is her being like, no, it's fine, I'm innocent, I'm good. And all of this happening when, like, it all kicked off when Saturn was in Scorpio, it's like, no, this is a lesson you have to learn about, like, you know,
big,
who you're
big
trusting.
Turning points when Saturn has is in these dignified places of Libra, where it's exalted, or Capricorn, where it has domicile.
Right.
Also, its MC is there, so there's that place of visibility.
Yeah. And, you know, right around when Saturn entered Aquarius was when it was discovered that her partner was having an affair with a younger woman. And she famously found out because...
It was so messy.
But I think it speaks to that, you know, Saturn being the exaltation ruler of Libra, where it's like she's, you know, like kind of facing both at once, both the external and the internal. And so I think, I know this is such a funny detail, but it's alleged that she found out because she was gone from their home, and she came home and someone had eaten all of her jam, and none of her children or her husband eat strawberry jam. And so she...
Are they like allergic to strawberry jam, or
they just don't like it?
Oh, okay.
So she knew that he had to have been with someone and that that woman was in their house.
What planet rules strawberry jam?
I was wondering.
I'm going to say Taurus. I think that's Taurus.
Yeah, like Venus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think maybe that could also be the Virgo sixth house, where she is like, no, I eat my strawberry jam every single morning. Yeah, so she finally went to court when Saturn was approaching her Sun and, you know, Saturn opposition. And interestingly, she did settle instead of being found guilty in November of 2022, right when Saturn entered her 12th house.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I was actually really worried she was going to go to jail when I saw that Saturn was in her 12th. I was like, wow, that could be really bad. So I think she kind of figured the writing was on the wall, you know.
Maybe a good example too of like the mutual reception, even though it's like separating between the Sun and Saturn, they're opposed, but they're sharing signs. So they're like involved in each other's resourcing and perhaps like more, you know, more inclined to offer resourcing because they want to, get that resourcing in return.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm so happy you used the example, Anna. It's a thank you for the Saturn breakdown through design. I'm obsessed with this. I think I talked about it back in 2022. I did everything, like I was doing monthly perfections and stuff like that, because it was just so literal. Basically, when all of that like last bit happened of like the cheating scandal at the same time as like the tax one, she was like 45. So she was in the 10th house, Capricorn perfection year. And specifically that summer, Mars was in Taurus. And so it was forming like a T-square between the Sun and Saturn and opposing her Uranus in the 8th house of like partners, money. And so that was like crazy enough. And then basically the details of the settlement of like the husband accepting the divorce because he didn't want it initially was that she had to pay for, I think it was like 5 return tickets a year for like him to see his children. So that's like the T-square with like Saturn in the 5th house is very literal. And also he wanted her to pay a debt of like, I think it was 300,000 euros that he had contracted. So again, that like 8th house and like Mars being activated and ruling the 8th house is like so very, very literal. And like there was so much else going on. Jupiter was also in Pisces, so in her 12th house. So I think that's also helped like keep her out of like jail. But yeah, I'm so glad you used that because I was geeking out on that chart because it is very cool.
Yeah, it is. And you just, you know, like Saturn in the fifth, that's such a difficult placement, especially when it's like so highlighted. So yeah, and I'm right there with you. I was like doing that work too.
Amazing. Thank you for sharing that. Does anybody have any other comments or thoughts about this chart before we move on?
The only thing I would add is that I noticed she's going through a nodal reversal, and those are not easy. They are not easy.
Yeah. Yeah, to also speak to the debt, the thing that jumped out to me, to speak to like the Sun in quote unquote detriment in the 11th of like fan groups, is that like I don't think like Shakira has this like staying power for a long time, which feels very Saturnian, but she doesn't have like rabid fans in the ways that especially some other like women singers have, you know, like the Kittens with Doja Cat, like the, you know, I don't even know what the Beehive, you know, like all of these things. And maybe that also speaks to kind of the Sun in this place in particular.
Yeah, I was looking at stats for her songs, and like her, when she actually had her Saturn return was when she released Oral Fixation, which is like her most successful album. And Hips Don't Lie has been, it has like one of the records of like the songs that has been played the most of like any song on the radio. Wow. So yeah, so you're right. She does have this like crazy staying power. But yeah, not as much, you're right. Not as many like stands.
Cool. All right, I think we have time for one more chart. Sorry that not everybody's going to be able to share a chart because I do want to respect people's time. But is there anybody that wants to share like the last chart? Simone, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I will share the woman of the moment, Megan Thee Stallion.
Yes. Okay. I'm glad that you're finishing with this, because I was actually excited to talk about this because so much is going on with her right now with Nicki Minaj, Megan Thee Stallion beef. So, and just for folks out there, this is a C-rated chart. So the timing is like pretty contested. So we don't have like a super reliable birth time for Megan. I think the person who found this is like an astrologer on Twitter, actually. And maybe they got it from something that Megan Thee Stallion said in an interview, but I'm not quite sure about the reliability of this. So this might be a little bit speculative in terms of what is the rising sign and degree. I just want to preface that.
Yeah, like we only have the chart because I think on like Twitter a while ago, somebody had asked her like what her sun, moon, rising was. And she said she was a Taurus rising.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But cool. Yeah, so but I don't know, obviously, like I don't think there's like necessarily a time attached to it. At least I don't think. But this is just based on her own, yeah,
Yeah, she said Taurus,
speculation.
and someone was like, okay, if you're born this day, you were born in this around this hour. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, so Megan Thee Stallion is an American rapper who is based in Houston, Texas, or from Houston. And she kind of like started to kind of blow up or get more traction in like 2018, which would have been right around her Jupiter return, because she was like 23, like, yeah, heading into 24. And she also has Jupiter in Sag. Yeah, so then, and then in 2019 is when she started to get like more and more like popularity, like with songs like Hot Girl Summer, like, and then also in 2020, she also did a song with Beyonce, or like they had the whole Savage song, and then that blew up on TikTok, and then she like Beyonce hopped on. And so, yeah, so she's been kind of having like a nice, like slow and steady, like rise to success, even though she's like relatively pretty young. And then in 2020 is when she unfortunately was shot by Tory Lanez. And that's when she like released this, like the information in the summer of 2020. And then in 2022, in December, is when she actually went to trial. And then that's when Tory Lanez got convicted. Yeah. And now she's kind of, I don't know, I guess like having her comeback moment, because kind of after that whole incident, she kind of had like a honestly like a rough couple of years, like, which I think kind of speaks to that, I don't know, like that kind of duality of, yeah, success or fame. Cause like, as she was getting more and more famous and like her star power was rising, she was having honestly probably the worst years of her life, because in 2019, her mom and her grandmother died all within the same month.
Wow.
And then after that, in 2020, she got shot. And then in 2022, she had her trial with Tory Lanez. And definitely in 2022, there just started to be like more controversy, or even like when she had announced the altercation, like people already were like doubting her, like not believing her. And she kind of went through, you know, just a lot of, yeah, drama, I guess, like within the industry, or people kind of, yeah, having a lot of negative things to say, even though obviously she was the victim in the situation. And then similarly, when like Tory went to trial and the whole court case kind of erupted, that's also kind of when she also was getting like more backlash, and a lot of people were once again doubting her. You know, people in the industry who she had formerly maybe had been close to her with friends had kind of, yeah, had all this controversy. And then I'm pretty sure it was like late last year, so in 2023, she released the song Cobra, which she talked about kind of similar themes about going through a lot of like struggle and depression, and also speculation that her ex-boyfriend Partisan had cheated on her. So just like I said, a lot of rough things going on with her, and like in a more personal realm. Yeah, well, also she is having all of the success of, like I said, she also won 3 Grammys. Like, you know, she's like definitely like on her rise to, yeah, staying power and stuff like that. Even coined a whole new term, hot girl summer, hot girl, like that whole, you know, really was like a whole movement. So looking more about her chart, really, I feel like that Jupiter Saturn square, I feel like is like, you know, that both at 12 degrees, I think is pretty illustrative of, you know, what Jupiter gives and domiciles, Saturn takes away, you know? And I feel like that kind of equilibrium, like in her life. Also, I noticed this Moon Mars conjunction and presumably her fourth house. And I thought that was really interesting, because I do feel like that kind of talks about, like, you know, Moon representing motherhood, women, and then also Mars representing like loss and like those things kind of being taken away. But also for her herself, like when you think about the moon being the body and like, you know, what happens to like you physically, and then having that like approaching Mars kind of like, yeah, unfortunately the violence that she's experienced like as well. And then all of this opposite, this like Aquarius sun, that if she's in a Taurus rising, like Taurus rising, that would be in like the top in the 10th house. So I would kind of see that as like, maybe there's a lot of harm being happening in the private life of like the fourth house, while the public life maybe seems a little bit more like, yeah, like she's, you know, successful or like very visible and stuff. also me and Megan have like the same like moon around the same degree, so like, you know, but I luckily do not have Mars there, so but yeah, I think it's like pretty interesting. And then if she has a Taurus rising, she's ruled by this like Venus over here at 12 degrees, and I think it's interesting because I know this like Mercury Mars conjunction that we just like had was like around like 13 degrees or something. So like really right on top of her Venus, and she's having this very public like beef with Nicki Minaj, who's a Sagittarius and a Virgo moon. And I think it's kind of interesting because like I feel like that conjunction being right on top of like her Venus and Neptune and all that stuff, it's very much like I feel that as like stuff being done to her, like I don't know, like she's not necessarily like being the aggressor other than just dropping a song and then walking away from her phone. I don't know. Yeah. So, and that kind of, yeah. And then she also is having her Saturn return. So this year Saturn is going to cross over her. She's going to have an exact, her Pisces Saturn at 12 degrees. So I think that really kind of, I kind of see that as like the Saturn return maybe being like a solidifying moment, I guess. I think this is kind of probably the time in which she's really going to have that like make it or break it in terms of like, will she actually cement her place like in the WAP industry, you know, like especially as she is like, you know, you can even see like Nicki kind of being Saturn herself in terms of like an older figure who's trying to like, you know, like Cronus ate his kids, you know. Trying to take her down, trying to like, you know, maybe feeling that pressure of like, oh my god, is Megan gonna upset me, you know, is Megan going to like, you know, get all of these like claims that like, you know, I haven't been able to achieve like myself. And so I feel like that's definitely going to be a big part of her Saturn return story, is her having to like prove herself and kind of prove that like she is here to stay. It's kind of like how I see it. So
do we know where Saturn's degree is right now?
Let me check.
Is it like,
it's at 6 degrees, five, six degrees. Yeah.
Okay. So it's like,
I think it's 5 degrees some minutes. I don't know the exact.
Okay, so her solar return, it'll be pretty wide when she has her solar return this year. Just interesting.
I wanted to like chime. It's so interesting what you said, Simone, especially about cementing her place in like the rap industry. And something that's so interesting to me, I was talking actually about this exact Venus placement degree with Chloe Margarita, shout out to her, who specializes in like fixed stars. And so I'm pretty sure her Venus has a parent to Alphard, a star in the Hydra constellation. And first of all, well, it's very funny that her whole imagery lately, as Venus is activated, is like the cobra, the serpent, hissing, all of that. And we're talking specifically about how this star, Alphard, it is a Venusian star, but it can also symbolize the jealousy of older people, and especially older women, in relation to like one's achievements, if you will, like as a woman kind of thing. And we were talking about this theme of like being young and like coming into an industry, and like older people in general, like people who have more of a career, who are more established in their careers, feeling threatened and insecure in the face of that in relation to this specific placement. And Megan has that, and it's so literal, and amazing job for pointing out the Mercury Mars conjunction right there. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what happens with Megan. Like, this, is it this summer when there's the Mars retrograde in Leo? So she'll be having a Mars and return.
Then in Cancer. Yeah.
Yeah, she'll be having like a kind of a Mars return with a Mars retrograde. So that'll be really interesting to see. Anybody else have any thoughts or comments about this chart before we wrap up or move on?
Simone mentioned that she kind of burst out on the scene in 2018. And I think that could be a good reason why she is Taurus rising, because Uranus entered Taurus in 2018. So it might be worth watching now that Uranus is direct, what happens when it crosses, for example, the 26th degree and it's square her sun, for example. That could be a, yeah, add more testimony to that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It'll be interesting to see what happens as well when Pluto comes up to meet her natal Mercury, because that's not too far away. And then given it's ruling her second and fifth, I wonder if she'll have like a crazy burst of creativity, and that'll, you know, kind of increase her bank balance to a degree. See what happens there.
Does anybody know the last term of Capricorn? Is it Mars's term?
Last term.
I'm just thinking about her MC and where her MC could be, because I feel like her public life feels very represented by Mercury and Aquarius.
It's a Mars term.
It's a Mars term, yeah. So the first 10 degrees of Aquarius is a Mercury term, and I feel like that's a great MC term for an MC, for a rapper. You know, especially with Mercury having both triplicity and term dignity in Aquarius, it feels like that could be like where her MC maybe could be. I'm not sure. I'm just kind of speculating here. But I guess I could also see, you know, she seems like a kind of martial person in her own way. You know, so yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was going to say, like, I think it's also funny her being a rapper and having, like, a Mercury retrograde and stuff like that. But I also feel like some of the songs that, like, really blew up would be, like, some remixes. Like, for example, like, the Savage remix of Beyonce, like, kind of, like, ultra made that even, like, I guess more famous, or, like, that sort of thing. But then in terms of timing, I think it's really interesting because, like, around the whole incident with Tory Lanez, that was when Saturn was in Aquarius, and so kind of like those first degrees of, like, the beginning of 2020 is like when, or July 2020 was like when Saturn was like in the beginning part of Aquarius, and then the whole thing kind of wrapped up and the end of 2022 when Saturn was like starting to almost like end its journey in Aquarius, and that would have been right around her sun, so, and also opposing her moon too. And yeah, speaking to someone who also had that Saturn opposite moon thing, I'm sure that was also like a pretty, yeah, just painful time in her life, about just like all of these like really personal things being like brought up to the spotlight, and also like the whole thing about like, yeah, like court and the law and like Saturn's exaltation of Libra, like, you know, all of these like, yeah, really heavy things kind of happening right as Saturn was about to like leave Aquarius.
Yeah, I feel like that first decan also, again, like I have my Venus there, it's a Venus decan. It also makes sense, like the Mercury term Venus decan thing, because she is like a kind of like style beauty icon, but is a rapper. Yeah, so that feels interesting, but you know, it'll be interesting to see when more details come out, if we can get a more concise birth time. All right. Yeah. If nobody has any other thoughts, I want to be respectful of everybody's time. Do we want to continue? Do we want to stop it here? Nicola and Jolly, do you have like, do you want to share charts?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Are we cool to continue? Eloise, do you have to go?
Yeah. Like not too long, but I can do, yeah.
Okay.
I'll let you guys know when it's time for me.
Okay. Cool. So if everybody's cool, yeah, we can continue a little longer.
I will try sharing my screen again. I don't know. I feel like I probably needed to like restart my computer or something, so I'll give it a
okay. shot. You could also let me know what chart.
Oh, sure. Yeah, let me try. Oh, that's working, I think.
Yep, there we go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there we go. So let's show you. Okay, so this is Judy Blume.
Love her chart.
Who is a children author. She's written a ton of books for kids. I think she started writing in the 70s when her kids went to school. She found that she had a bit more time on her hands and started writing. And to date, I think she's sold over 80 million books, which is a pretty insane figure. So she's Libra rising. She has a fifth house Aquarian stellium. a Leo moon, and I really love her chart because it's very similar to mine, and I have ambitions of writing for children. So I, when I saw it, I was like, oh my god,
that's really sweet.
Yeah, so because I mean, this is one that Lisa Scheim loves as well, and she's shared a few times on the astrology podcast, and that's where it first came to my attention. But I was a fan of her books. I read her books when I was younger. She's quite controversial as a writer for children. She touches on subjects like puberty, sex, menstruation. She is an Aquarian who certainly is pretty controversial. And I think I have a quote here, which I took, something like, okay, so 5 of her books were included in the American Library Association's list of the top 100 most banned books in the 90s.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, and she's just really honest and open about issues that kids want to know about. And she writes in a way that kids kind of can really, it's like she writes in the first person, and the kids can kind of really get into how things feel. And I kind of, I like that, like her Jupiter placement is in the second decan of Aquarius there, which is about kind of like bridging worlds. So I feel like what she has achieved as an author for kids is a way for kids to kind of see into the adult world, but still remain as children. She has a Leo moon. She has an incredibly large fan base. Just like Jolly was saying before, you know, what you create in the fifth is reflected in the 11th. And there's a recent documentary actually on Amazon, which covers her life. And it's a really nice watch, actually. She's such a lovely lady. She'd write back to all these kids who would write to her with like their problems. And she developed these relationships with a handful of them across the years, which is just such a sweet kind of addition to, you know, what she's put out into the world. I'm just looking at her 7th as well. She has Saturn and Mars there. She had a pretty tumultuous relationship. Like her first marriage broke down, she divorced. And then I think she was in her 50s, I think, when she met her current husband, maybe late 40s, 50s. And they're still together now. She's in her 80s. And she lives down in Florida and she works in her own bookstore, which is just the cutest thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's one of the charts that I really love. Aquarius.
Yeah, the first thing that jumps out to me with that is the 7th house, both malefics there with Saturn in fall and Mars in domicile, which if we think about the 7th, not only as romantic relationships, but as like clients, the people who are buying your book, Saturn rules the 5th of creativity. So it makes sense that there's like people who are very big fans and, you know, kind of like would buy all of her books, and then people who would ban her books. So yeah, that's a really cool manifestation of that. Anybody else have any comments about this chart or thoughts before we move on?
I always love this chart, especially because she has that wonderful MC and the third decan of Cancer, and it's like her books are so emotional, like I'm gonna cry.
There's also, it's like a smaller detail, but I love that like her chart ruler Venus is also in Aquarius, is like combust but rejoicing. And Nicola, you mentioned that she touches on issues of like puberty, and people are like writing letters to her about things that they feel kind of ashamed about towards like, you know, puberty and growing up and like more like taboo topics. And that's very like literal to me, like bringing light to issues that are usually taboo in society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was, oh, sorry. I was going to mention, I like how she has this like exact trine between Saturn and the moon. I feel like it's really cute. And I like how the moon also rules like the MC. So kind of, I feel like that trine is like, okay, her staying power, and kind of like Saturn adds that boost of like, okay, you're going to be here for a while, even if you are kind of like controversial.
Yeah, the comment that I was going to make is looking at this chart was just this idea that perhaps like conjunctions are mixtures, and perhaps more so than any planet, the sun can mix with other planets because it has the largest like moiety. It has the largest orb. Like a planet under the beams is 15 degrees away from the sun. So in this chart, both Venus and Jupiter are under the beams. And I think with the sun, we can think about like, you know, in for a native, like that kind of the natural significations of those other planets kind of mixing with the mind or thoughts. And so just curious if anybody has, just for general Aquarius sun natives, with sun conjunctions, if anyone has like general thoughts on how that can manifest.
I know. So, okay, this is just a general sun conjunction, but I know that Dr. Alomi mentioned that, for example, when you have Mercury close to the sun, and I think he looks at this in Barack Obama's chart, and the sun, of course, is in Leo. He says that it manifests a slower speech. So something like that, how the sun's rays can cause slowing down or that type of thing. So
I do have that, but my Mercury is retrograde and combust. It's like 2 degrees away from my sun. And I think actually I talk faster than I think. I think I actually think slow and talk fast.
That's interesting.
I have a combust Mercury as well, but it is direct, and I'm the opposite, which is interesting. My brain is going 10 to the dozen, but I can't form the words properly. That's so interesting.
Yeah, it is my chart ruler too. So I think in my 10th house ruler. So I think that is contributing.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. All right, cool. Jolly, do you want to share your chart and then we'll wrap up?
I will. It'll be a super quick because, cool. Yeah, let me see. Let me make sure that and share my screen. So if you can see that.
Awesome. I'm excited about this one too. Yeah.
I'll do is I'll just look at that first. So this is Michael Jordan. He is one of my favorite basketball players. I was living in Chicago when he actually came onto the floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And, you know, the rumor was going around, this was January 1995, that he was going to be coming out of retirement. And sure enough, in March, just 3 months later, he held a press conference and just said, I'm back. And, you know, he won a total of 6 NBA championships with the Chicago Bulls. And the thing that stands out for me the most, and one of the reasons I picked this chart as well, was because he's an Aquarius sun in the element of air, and his nickname is Air Jordan, or his airness. I mean, you can't get more, you know, I think Aquarian sun than that in a lot of ways. I think it's really interesting that he has the sun in the eighth house, which, you know, maybe people would be like, okay, well, that's one of the not so great houses and whatnot. But what is really interesting for me is that he is one of the most effectively marketed athletes of his generation. And the eighth house,
so true. To,
you know, the esteem of others, it speaks to resources and how people use you as a resource. And this idea of, you know, sponsorship. And it was quite funny because when he announced that he was coming back out of retirement, the 5 companies that he endorsed outperformed the S&P for a week. So I was just like, yeah, this man's phenomenal when it comes to to money, to trade, to marketing. And, you know, we can see that maybe also with that Mercury there, I think, as well.
Yeah.
But going a little bit, so instead of actually parsing his chart, I mean, you know, certainly he's got the Mars in Leo, phenomenal athlete that's ruling his 10th house in the whole sign. He had Jupiter, you know, not conjunct, but no, almost conjunct his MC in the terms of Mars. So, you know, we can certainly see, and then of course Mars rules his fifth. So we can see this like successful, well-paid athlete kind of vibe happening here. But what I wanted to actually look at, which I just thought was fascinating, were some of the dates that stood out for me. So in July 23, 1993, his father was murdered.
Right.
And if you use a diurnal chart, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to do that. Let me go back. Hang on a second. You'll see what I mean. So, okay, sorry. We do that. And I change that to, there we go. So a diurnal chart is basically when you have your birth time and your birthplace, and then you just insert the date. So if I was doing it for today, it would just be, I put in today's date, but everything else, time and place is relevant to yourself.
Interesting. So same birthplace, same birth time, different date.
But just the date that you're looking at.
Yeah.
If you're looking at your daily diurnal chart, then you would just put in today's date. But in this particular case, of course, we're looking at the 23rd of July, 1993, when his dad was murdered. And of course, you can see Saturn is on his son.
Mm.
And I just found that so striking. And, you know, and of course, Saturn is just ingressed where his Mars is as well. I mean, you know, there's probably other ways that you can parse this, I'm sure, but for me, that really, really stood out. And obviously, this was his Saturn return as well. So I thought that was quite something. And then if you look at March 18th, 1995. I don't know if I've got it on here. I thought I did. See if I can just change it. So, 18th March 1995, and this is when he announced his coming back. He was having a, look at that, he was having a Mars return, and the lot of fortune is on, literally on his son. So I, again, I just thought it was so interesting. He is, to me, a very solar figure. And if you've ever seen him play, I mean, I was lucky because I was living in Chicago at the time. I was able to watch him play in real life. The man flew. He literally flew. And if you put the chart, actually, if we just, again, go back to his Braddock chart, in Placidus, the sun actually ends up in the ninth house. And the way I've seen it parsed or interpreted is that if we think of the ninth house as journeys or long journeys, I mean, this is the man who invented the traveling free throw, right? And just, again, there's some amazing shots of him just leap. I mean, nobody did it before him, right? And he would jump at that line to dunk it in. And I just thought having the sun in the ninth house in Placidus really spoke to that as well. So
yeah, I want to say for anybody that hasn't seen it, I'm not like a big basketball fan, or like, you know, I'm not a big sports person in general, but I really enjoyed the Michael Jordan documentary that was on Netflix, because it really goes into his personality and his life and the ways that he impacted the game of basketball in ways that feel very kind of descriptive of, you know, of this chart. You know, even the 10th house stuff, like he took, you know, and Mars and Leo, he took his profession so like personally, you know, and like it was so much like, you know, just a competitor kind of like through and through. And it's interesting, I don't know that much about his finances, but I'm like, he made Nike a lot of money, which I think speaks to the eighth house, other people's resources stuff. And with the malefic out of sect in the second, I'm like, I'm sure I'm interested to know where the balance is, like how much was he kind of taken advantage of and how much did he make a whole lot of people a lot of money or make them a lot more money than he made. I'm not quite sure, but
he ultimately was extremely savvy. So if there was a time where he was taken advantage of, it didn't last very long because he opened, you know, like pizza restaurants. And then obviously, you know, all the,
I think he negotiated his contracts very well too. Yeah. If I remember correctly, with like the help of his parents, perhaps like his mom, I think if I remember correctly, was like really savvy about negotiating contracts.
Venus and, on the descendant, ruling the fourth house.
Yeah.
I was just going to say exactly that. Exactly that. Okay.
Yeah. So I thought this was true, and it is. He did have to pay an enormous divorce settlement with his first wife, $168 million in 2006.
Wow.
So yeah,
that is enormous.
I was like, there has to be, like you were saying, the Venus on the descendant, but
yeah,
Saturn in the eighth.
Mm.
Yeah.
Amazing. All right, y'all. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up here. We've gone almost an hour and a half longer than we expected, which makes sense. But thank you all for hanging in there with me and for sharing all your thoughts and your knowledge and your experience. I thought this was a really great conversation. Yeah, I hope to chat with you all again soon. And thanks again.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
To support the show by donating or becoming a member, please visit my website, which is linked in the show notes. And please subscribe to the show wherever you listen. You can also find me on Instagram and Twitter. See those links in the show notes as well. If you have any questions or feedback on the show, please feel free to contact me via my website or email me at sbalhorary@gmail.com. In the show notes, you can also find links to astrologers and resources that we touched on in this episode. Thanks for listening to the show. I'll see you next time.